Welcome to the MSF Frontline Reports podcast for April 2008. Médecins Sans Frontières, Doctors Without Borders, or MSF, is an independent medical humanitarian aid organization. I'm Avril Benoit. In this edition, MSF studies ways of predicting and responding to measles outbreaks in the West African nation of Niger.
The biggest lesson is that the way to combat measles on a larger scale and for the long term is to have strategies which are cross-border or international.
How a South African mother and her baby daughter fought to survive a deadly form of tuberculosis.
The doctor at the clinic discovered that my TB treatment is not working. My TB is resisting. So it was an MTR TB. I was so shocked because it was my first time to hear about this MTR. I know nothing about the MTR.
But first, Svenja Könel on how thousands are still waiting for the promise of peace in southern Sudan. The peace agreement between northern and southern Sudan is 3 years old. More than 1 million refugees and internally displaced people have returned home. The south is stable, but there are still insecure areas, and MSF is still forced to provide emergency assistance with more than 130 international aid workers and 1,300 Sudanese staff members in more than a dozen villages and towns.
We can put her in the bag. I want like an IV line. That's for the glucose. I don't know if she has like low glucose.
Emergency in Lea Hospital. An MSF team takes care of an unconscious woman in the middle of southern Sudan, in the middle of nowhere.
She's completely unconscious. Like an IV line and a glucose right now.
There was war between northern and southern Sudan for more than two decades. In the south, more than 2 million people died. The war has now been over for 3 years, but the emergency intervention of MSF goes on. Here in Lea, there is no end in sight.
A disaster. When MSF leave, for example, let's say it left today and leave the hospital like this, it would be a big, big problem, because children would die.
Says resident Tito Gatkoi, staff member of MSF. The need of the people in Lea and elsewhere in southern Sudan is still overwhelming, even 3 years after the signing of the peace agreement. Laboratory technician Peter Geng.
The only one thing that has changed because of peace is only that there is no ganchi. Because children are still learning under the tree. Community have got no good water, no school, and no hospital.
The maternal mortality rate in southern Sudan is among the highest in the world. Tuberculosis, an almost forgotten disease in the West, is one of the main killers. Outbreaks of measles, meningitis, and cholera are common. And the rate of malnutrition amongst children is alarmingly high, even during the months following harvest. Above all, people still die of malaria, diarrhea, and respiratory infections, easily preventable and curable diseases. Dr. Paula Etienne.
For example, most of our patients right now, it's malaria. You can do this in health posts. The problem is that you don't have them. They don't exist.
The teams of MSF are often the only ones providing help on the spot, but they can't be everywhere at once. It's not uncommon for sick people to have to walk for days to reach the next project site, which means that smaller health problems may become life-threatening illnesses. Paula Etienne.
Like small children, they just died of dehydration. It's a simple problem that if just like with oral rehydration, you save a life. But sometimes they just arrive late because that's the only place they have to go.
Southern Sudan has had a Ministry of Health for 2 years, but a functioning health system is still a long way off. Head of Mission, Martin Braxma.
I've been to other war zones, but at least there after the war, there was still something that we could go back to. And I think that's a very big difference as compared to southern Sudan, because there it's not rebuilding a country, it's basically building a country. There's nothing in place.
Typically, this would be the time for developmental organizations to start their reconstruction work. And indeed, a lot of emergency organizations have reduced or stopped their work for various reasons. Martin Braxma.
The problems are still specifically at a health, if you look at it from a health perspective, are still very much the same as they were just before that peace agreement was signed. But the funding is more focused now towards developmental organizations and is going less to the emergency organizations.
But so far, only a few developmental organizations have become active on the ground. A problem for all organizations is the lack of qualified staff, starting with basic qualifications such as reading and writing. For decades, there were no schools in southern Sudan. Often, only the refugees are educated, but a lot of them still live in the north or in neighboring countries.
Most returnees are still not willing to come back here because there's really no value added in their lives to be here. They are better off in a refugee camp where they're provided with education, provided with a meal, provided with other social amenities which they would not find here. There's not even a playing field for the children. It's easier to stay in a refugee camp. It's more, I've seen those refugee camps. They are not the best thing you want to be in, but they are better than being here.
Says Chris Kilu, project coordinator in the village of Pieri. And those who return, in spite of these difficulties, often prefer to live in bigger towns like Lier. This creates new problems. Food scarcity increases and hygiene deteriorates. The war between northern and southern Sudan ended 3 years ago, but in the coming months, or even years, the south will remain dependent upon aid, including that from emergency organizations such as MSF. Project coordinator Chris Kilu.
They need development, they need roads, but they need to be alive first to have to drive on these roads. To go to school, you need to be alive first.
That story was produced by Svenja Kunnel. You can read a special report and watch a short film about the situation in southern Sudan on our websites, msf.org or doctorswithoutborders.org. Although it receives less attention than the big three diseases of AIDS, tuberculosis, and malaria, measles is a leading cause of death among young children worldwide. Thanks to vaccinations, measles has been virtually eliminated in most of the industrialized world, but it remains a major killer in some developing countries. Here's Oliver Yun with a report on an MSF research study of measles outbreaks.
In February, Epicentre, the research arm of MSF, published a study in the journal Nature on measles outbreak dynamics in Niger. The study included authors from the World Health Organization, United States National Institutes of Health, Niger's Ministry of Health, and Penn State University. Rebecca Grace, one of the study authors and Epicentre's Director of Epidemiology and Program, explains how the study collaboration began.
Yeah, the paper that's published in Nature is actually the culmination of several years of research, actually almost 4 years of research. And it began in 2003 when MSF got to the point, and Epicentre as well, where we came to be extremely frustrated with the current situation. And by the current situation, I mean the WHO guidelines for outbreak response in after measles outbreaks have begun. And at that point in time, we went back to the original WHO guidelines, and we looked at the approach that was used to evaluate how this recommendation came about. And what we found was that it was based on a series of mathematical models that were developed from models of measles dynamics in developed countries, specifically in England and Wales. And they were based on data that essentially came from contexts other than those with which MSF works. And so what we did at the time was we said, well, what if we use and we ask those people, those researchers that did those original models, but this time to help us apply those models and those techniques to our context.
The study analyzed 17 years of measles cases from Niamey, the capital of Niger, looking at monthly and year-to-year variations in measles transmission during epidemics. The researchers found that measles outbreaks in Niamey exhibited a strong seasonality but were highly irregular, punctuated with fade-outs lasting multiple years.
The reason you get these sort of, they're called stochastic fade-outs, is because if you have a situation where if regional vaccine coverage increases, when you introduce and the overall rate of reintroduction into an area that may have a more stable dynamic, the more seasonal patch or that stable patch declines, which makes outbreaks less predictable, essentially. And then the longer the gap between outbreak, then this leads to a greater buildup of susceptibles and then the potential for a larger outbreak to follow.
When a fade-out ends and an outbreak does occur, Rebecca Grace explains the importance of the geographic coverage of the vaccination response.
Take a situation like Niger, which is bordered by, to the south, it's bordered by Nigeria, where there are perpetual or semi-perpetual measles outbreaks. And that border isn't a strong fixed border. It's quite a fluid one where people go back and forth. And so you're perpetually in a situation where you're reintroducing the measles virus into a country. And so for me, the biggest lesson is that the way to combat measles on a larger scale and for the long term is to have strategies which are cross-border or international in that context, and that take in consideration how populations move and migrate throughout the course of the year, and also takes in consideration ethnic differences.
This research by Epicentre and MSF has been influential in that it has helped change WHO guidelines for responding to measles outbreaks. Whereas older guidelines called only for treating the sick after an outbreak with no new vaccinations, the new guidelines now recommend vaccinating even during an ongoing epidemic.
How this research has helped target interventions has been, one, has been to convince the WHO of the importance of doing so, so it's been easier to gain MOH support in terms of vaccination campaigns, and also in terms of helping to define what are the key criteria we need to look at before determining who to target in a mass vaccination campaign where resources might be limited and we might have to make choices.
The publication of this research is timely, given the recent measles outbreak in Niger that started in January of this year. In response, MSF recently completed vaccinations of nearly 500,000 children in Niger.
That was Oliver Yun. You can read a summary of the study and learn more about measles at doctorswithoutborders.org. Busisiwe Beko lives in Transkei, South Africa. Both she and her baby daughter were diagnosed with multi-drug-resistant tuberculosis, or MDR-TB. South Africa has some of the highest rates of drug-resistant TB in the world. Busisiwe tells of her struggle to endure the grueling and lengthy treatment for MDR-TB.
Hello, my name is Busisiwe. I'm 33 years old. I'm from Transkei in Lady Fred District. I've got two kids. My old one is a boy, is 9 years old, and my second one is a girl, is 2 years old. My story is, I was pregnant, my second child. I was sweating at night. I was feverish, and then I was having some chest pains. They test me. I was so shocked when they come back with the result saying I'm HIV positive. So I was so worried because I've got two positives now. I'm pregnant positive and I'm HIV positive. The sweat was developing and the pains from the chest were growing. It was so difficult for me to go to work. I have to go back to the clinic again, and I did tell them that I'm still coughing. I'm getting worse now. I was getting thin, and I was very, very weak. I stand the form and then they do the x-rays. The x-rays came out and they say I also have a TB. Now I was very, very worried again because I've got TB, I've got HIV, and then I'm pregnant. I go back to my doctor and my doctor suggested that I must take out my baby because I'm positive and I'm weak, so I won't make it. I was so afraid because by that time I was already 5 months pregnant. And then I suggested to go back to Khayelitsha because I was coming from Khayelitsha. I started my TB treatment on September. September, October, November, and then by December, I have to deliver my baby. My baby was, it's a girl. And then from there, February, I was supposed to be discharged. Unfortunately, the doctor at the clinic discovered that my TB treatment is not working. My TB is resisting. So it was an MDR TB. I was so shocked because it was my first time to hear about this MDR. I know nothing about the MDR. I have to wait for the MDR treatment for 3 weeks. I was staying without the treatment for 3 weeks, staying with my baby. My baby by that time was 3 months old. I go to the appointment for the baby. And then they discovered that my baby was having the TB already. And then when my baby was admitted, they called me, they said there is the bed available for me. I have to stay there for 3 weeks because I was almost finished the intensive phase. And then from there, they discharged me. I was sad and I was crying because I was used to stay with my baby. Now I have to go now and I have to leave my baby again alone at the hospital. I go to the counselors and they say, no, it's all going to be fine. The baby is going to stay there for such a long time because it's a baby and it's going to take a long time to get rid of it. It's not going to be just like me. And then my baby was discharged on the 1st of December. I said, thanks God, because the following day it was going to be her birthday. I was very glad. And then I promised to the nurses that I'm going to look after her. And I promised to the professor that, no, I'm going to look after her. I continue with my treatment and my baby continue with my treatment. And then from there, I was discovered as a cured person from MDR.
You can learn more about MSF's efforts to expand access to treatment for MDR-TB and manage HIV-TB co-infection on our websites. Thanks for listening to the MSF Frontline Reports podcast for April 2008. Médecins Sans Frontières, or MSF, is an independent medical humanitarian aid organization that delivers emergency assistance to people affected by wars, epidemics, and natural or man-made disasters in nearly 60 countries around the world. For more information about these stories, as well as updates on other underreported humanitarian emergencies, please visit our websites, doctorswithoutborders.org or msf.org.